This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This agreement was achieved as a result of diplomacy. It shows that diplomacy can work. It paves the road, perhaps, toward a longer ceasefire, maybe a permanent one.
That was Ori Ner with the U.S. group Americans for Peace Now about the ceasefire agreement between Israel and Hamas. Details coming up also. A young Ethiopian American is working to help cancer patients. And an ambulance driver is opening up new paths for women and refugees. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. After almost 7 weeks of war, a four-day ceasefire has taken hold between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. And Israel authorities a short time ago said 13 hostages, women and children, have been freed. For Israel, the ceasefire deal means the return of 50 women and children out of a total of about 240 hostages. In return, about 150 Palestinians, mostly minors and women, held in Israeli prisons will be freed. About 30 are expected to be handed over today. Also, more aid trucks will begin to cross into Gaza from Egypt, carrying badly needed fuel, food, and medical supplies. For more on the situation, I have journalist Rick Rosen on the line from Tel Aviv. Welcome to Africa News Tonight.
Thank you.
So, Ricky, Israel and Hamas have been negotiating for weeks over the hostages. A deal had seemed to have been working within reach, but on a few occasions only it never materialized. But now things are moving. We are seeing some movement. So talk to us right now. What is the latest on the exchange of hostages and prisoners?
Well, the process started at 7 a.m. local time when the ceasefire went into effect in Gaza. And then during the course of the day, Hamas was supposed to be rounding up the Israeli hostages who were released from a hospital in Gaza at about 4:30 this afternoon, about an hour and a half ago. And then they were handed over to the Red Cross, who brought them through Gaza to the border of Egypt. And we're now waiting, thousands of Israelis, and especially the families of these 13 hostages, are waiting to see who exactly is in the ambulances of the Red Cross. And they will soon be turned over to Israeli soldiers and then make their way to Israeli hospitals and to meet with their families.
Is it known when more hostages will be freed?
Well, the terms of the agreement were for a four-day ceasefire. Each day would be, there would be 12 to 13 Israeli hostages released, together with 39 Palestinian prisoners who are in Israeli jails for security offenses. They would also be released to the West Bank. Besides the ceasefire, there would be a huge amount of humanitarian aid, including fuel, let into Gaza from the border with Egypt.
So after 7 weeks of fighting, there is this agreement for a four-day ceasefire and the release of some hostages. Ricky, what is the mood there?
The mood is very mixed. There, I think, is a huge amount of relief that this process has begun, the process of getting the hostages back. There's also sadness because the vast majority of the hostages are still in captivity. And there's a lot of tension about whether this process will continue as planned because the ceasefire has to hold on both sides. And the list of the Israeli hostages who are supposed to be released tomorrow hasn't yet been released. So everybody, there's a state of high tension, waiting to see that things will go as planned.
Journalist Ricky Rosen on the line from Tel Aviv, briefing us on the latest. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Americans for Peace Now, APN, has welcomed the news of a deal to release some 50 hostages held by Hamas and other militants in the Gaza Strip and the agreement to a four-day-long ceasefire. In addition, APN welcomed the reported agreement to release Palestinian minors held in Israeli prisons. Ori Ner, spokesperson for Americans for Peace Now, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi what the mutually agreed upon ceasefire could bring.
There are two types of good steps that we see here. One is on the own merits of the agreement that was just achieved between Israel and Hamas. And that is, you know, the release of hostages, obviously, which is a good thing. We're talking about a lot of children, more than 30 children and women and mothers and so on, elderly. So these are people that should be home and not in the hands of captors in the Gaza Strip. We see the release of Palestinian children, you know, Palestinian teens and children who are held by Israel. And that's also a good thing, obviously. I looked at the list of the candidates for release, the 300 candidates. Most of them have done, you know, petty crimes like throwing rocks and things like that. Most of them are not real terrorists. So that's, I think, is a good thing as well. And then there are other things here that are significant. The fact that there is an extended ceasefire or truce or pause, whatever you want to call it, that is more than a few hours, that is a few days, that really can allow the providers of humanitarian services in Gaza to reorganize and so on. And then there's the other dimension, which is the potential that this gives for turning the conflict from the road of hostilities and violence and bloodshed toward resolution. And that is really important. This agreement was achieved as a result of diplomacy. It shows that diplomacy can work. It paves the road perhaps toward a longer ceasefire, maybe a permanent one. So this really is a change in the dynamics of the crisis so far, from constant violent escalation toward perhaps, hopefully, resolution. So those are the main good things that we see here.
A recent study by Carnegie Endowment for International Peace says an international peace conference next year or a second Arab peace initiative with the help of the Arab countries that normalized relations with Israel could break the deadlock in the peace process between the two sides. Your thoughts?
My thoughts, and again, I may be overly optimistic here, but you know, this is what I do for a living. I try to look for hope for peace. Is that first, the agreements that Israel has already achieved with several Arab countries, such as the UAE and Morocco and Bahrain, could really serve as a tool for a process of advancing negotiations, much more so if Israel really advances its negotiations with Saudi Arabia, which is really the main player on the Arab arena. If it could advance those talks towards some kind of a normalization agreement, that agreement could really be a tool to also advance Israeli-Palestinian relations. It's not immediate. Maybe even much less than immediate. In other words, take years or so. If you just look at the fact that Israeli relations with the countries with which it recently normalized relations, such as Morocco and Bahrain, that those relations withstood, so far at least, the very bloody war that we've seen in the Gaza Strip, it's a good sign.
That was Ori Ner, spokesperson for Americans for Peace Now, a Washington organization advocating for a sustainable peace between Israelis and Palestinians through a two-state solution. He was speaking to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. A 14-year-old Ethiopian-born American in the U.S. state of Virginia has won the 3M Young Scientist Challenge, an annual science competition for U.S. students in grades 5 through 8. VOA's Eden Germau recently spoke with the winner in Fairfax County, Virginia, in this report narrated by Salem Salamone.
Eman Bekele says that he has always been passionate about problem solving. That curiosity has earned the Ethiopian-born American teen the grand prize and $25,000 in cash in this year's 3M Young Scientist Challenge, a competition for U.S. students enrolled in 5th through 8th grade. Hemon entered a bar soap that could fight a type of cancer known as melanoma.
Yeah, I've always been really passionate about just finding solutions that aren't just really great from a science perspective, but are also accessible to as many people as possible. And for a disease like skin cancer, where cures already exist in the field, the only issue is that those cures aren't accessible to everyone.
Hemon soap is still being tested for its effectiveness, but it works by activating special cells called dendritic cells that help the body fight skin cancer.
Well, I tried to come up with a solution that was not only great from a science perspective that could work, but then at the same time was also affordable and accessible.
Hemon's parents say that they didn't realize how important his project was until their son was shortlisted among the top 10 competitors. His father, Wendwesen Bekele, says they couldn't contain their excitement.
When he become like a top 10, I was really, we were so satisfied. And then when he become like the first, the top, we were so, so overwhelmed with his accomplishments. So we're still so happy for him.
His mother, Mulumebit Kitacho, says he has always been curious as a child.
Hemon likes to create. Since he was a child, he used to like to research things. He used to prefer playing with things he created instead of toys. He was social. He liked to play. He liked to talk and play with other people. He likes to read, but he also listens. He is a good listener.
Hemon says his skin cancer treating soap must still get an approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. When that happens, he hopes it can be made accessible to people in underserved and low-income communities.
Of course, there's a lot of work still left to get to that goal, but I hope that, like I was saying, by 2028 it'll turn into a nonprofit and we'll have to see from there where it ends up.
The World Health Organization's Cancer Agency estimates that nearly 325,000 new cases of melanoma were diagnosed worldwide in 2020. Hemon says all he wants to do is make people's lives a bit easier. For Eden Geremo in Fairfax County, Virginia, Salim Solomon, VOA News.
Somalia's cabinet says the death toll from devastating floods is close to 100, with almost 2 million people affected. Somalia, like other countries in the Horn of Africa, is battling torrential rains and flash floods just as it emerges from a drought that pushed millions to the brink of famine. The government has declared a state of emergency over the disaster, which has driven about 700,000 people from their homes. The French news agency AFP says heavy rains have devastated whole neighborhoods and farmland and destroying bridges. The heavy rainfall is linked to the El Niño weather phenomenon, which is expected to last until at least next April. The United Nations says dozens of people have also perished in flooding in Ethiopia and Kenya, and aid groups have warned the situation is only likely to worsen. East Africa has just endured the worst drought in four decades after multiple failed rainy seasons left millions of people in need. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Double amputee Olympic runner Oscar Pistorius was granted parole today, 10 years after shooting his girlfriend through a toilet door at his home in South Africa. A South African Correctional Service official said Pistorius would be released from prison in January. Pistorius had been jailed since late 2014 for the February 2013 killing of model Riva Steenkamp. He shot her multiple times in the bathroom of his Pretoria villa in the pre-dawn hours. He said he thought a burglar had entered the home. He was convicted of murder and sentenced to 13 years and 5 months in prison. Pistorius was a gold medal Paralympic track star and in 2012 became the first double amputee to compete in the Olympics. In a statement today, Steenkamp's mother said she was not convinced Pistorius was rehabilitated because she thinks he never told the truth about her daughter's death. She also says she does not believe his version of the shooting. Batula Ali has defied gender norms and societal expectations to become the only woman ambulance driver in Kenya's largest refugee camp, Dadaab. Ahmed Hussein met Ali and has this report from Garissa County, Kenya.
Early in the morning, Batula Ali sets off to begin work in Kenya's Dadaab refugee camp in Garissa County. This is a job she has been doing for the last 22 years. On any given day, Ali might be driving pregnant mothers to the hospitals or helping young, malnourished children in homes and dispensaries. But sometimes, she says, her responsibilities go way beyond just being behind the wheel.
When traveling from Hagardera refugee camp in Garissa, I go with a nurse so that in case a pregnant woman delivers on the way, I put on gloves and help out. I then hold the baby and clean the bed for her, stabilize the patient, and then drive to the hospital.
For the last 4 years, Ali has been working with a humanitarian organization, the International Rescue Committee, or IRC, helping thousands of mothers in refugee camps. Ali says she has battled prejudice and stereotypes that suggest driving is only for men, but she says these obstacles have only served to embolden her resolve and work to make a difference.
I have faced many challenges. I used to drive non-Muslim engineers and people used to abuse me, calling me a prostitute and throw stones at me. But I didn't bow to their pressure. I kept on doing my job.
One of the biggest challenges came from home, where her husband also did not approve of her driving.
He used to abuse me and beat me to leave this job, but I refused. When I got out into the field, he used to label me a prostitute until we divorced.
Despite that, she says she is content with her role as an ambulance driver and as a mother to 7 children.
I'm very happy with my job. I have raised my children with it, and I have educated them and myself using earnings from this job.
Ali is not stopping there. She says her next plan is to train as a nurse to further her career in saving lives. I'm Hussein for VOA News, Garissa, Kenya.
Officials in northern Cameroon say conflicts over food, water, and other resources have greatly declined due to the planting of about 500,000 trees in and around a refugee camp. UN officials and rights groups visited the area to collect success stories on reforestation projects that also reduce climate shocks to share during the upcoming COP28 climate conference. Moki Edwin Kendeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Residents and officials in northern Cameroon, near the border with Nigeria and Chad, say clashes between refugees, displaced persons and host communities over food and water have declined in the past year, mainly due to the new forest growing in their midst. The area is home to about 120,000 refugees from Nigeria, along with a number of internally displaced Cameroonians and returnees whose lives were uprooted by terrorist group Boko Haram. 10 years ago, UNHCR set up the Minawawo refugee camp on about 630 hectares of land near the borders to house 15,000 refugees. But unending violence swelled the camp's population to 72,000, exerting pressure on natural resources. A 26-year-old mother of two, Lietu Habila, fled Nigeria and came to the camp to escape Boko Haram violence in 2016. She says conflicts between local residents, refugees, and displaced persons over resources like food and firewood happened almost on a daily basis.
The time that
Habila says she is very happy now because she can cut tree branches and use them for cooking, unlike in the past when it was very difficult to find wood at the Minawawo refugee camp. She says besides cutting down a few tree branches to use as fuel wood, the refugee agency UNHCR has taught them how to make nurseries to plant more trees and make briquettes or compressed blocks of coal dust that help them in cooking. Cameroon's northern border with Chad and Nigeria is one of the most ecologically fragile areas in Central Africa. The Cameroon government says climate change, population growth, and rampant exploitation of wood and non-timber plant resources threatens ecological biodiversity and has plunged civilians into deep poverty. The United Nations reports that in 2016, five Nigerian refugee leaders got together and decided to plant trees in the Minawawo camp to alleviate the situation. Trees planted include cassia, neem, acacia, moringa, cashew, and luxenia, which are all drought-resistant and have branches that can be pruned and used for fuel. Some of their leaves are also used for medicine, food, or fertilizer. The UNHCR reports that close to 500,000 trees have been planted in and around the Minawawo camp. Refugees and host populations say the trees make it possible for them to create gardens in shade, feed and care for animals, and reduce conflicts related to sharing resources. Women say they are no longer exposed to sexual abuse and violence while trekking long distances to fetch firewood and carry water. UNHCR Goodwill Ambassador and environmental activist Emtital Mahmoud visited Northern Cameroon this month. She says she listened to refugees' success stories and experiences about the impact of the reforestation project in their daily lives.
The stories that we're seeing in Cameroon are not just stories of crisis, but they're also stories of triumph, stories of resilience, stories of resourcefulness that people are doing to not only survive but thrive in the face of adversity, in the face of our changing climate. I do believe that these solutions created by refugees and led by refugees, seeing this work in Minawal tells me it can work in Darfur, Nepal, it can work in Bangladesh, because there are so many similar contexts.
Speaking to Cameroon state broadcaster CRTV, Mahmoud, who is also a former refugee, said she documented what she called powerful messages and insights to bring to the attention of the world during COP28. She said addressing climate change and supporting initiatives like the refugee reforestation project in Cameroon should be a priority on all development agendas. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Hi, this is Larry London, and I'd like to invite you to a brand new feature coming up on Tuesdays on Border Crossings. And we've got some great guests lined up. We are going to bring you our Tuesday Spotlight Artist of the Week. We will feature and highlight an interview and some live performances. And it's all happening on Border Crossings at 1500 Universal. This is something special that's coming in December on Tuesdays here on The Voice of America.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.